It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. As the country heads into the fifth month of the coronavirus pandemic, many people have limited the number of visitors they allow into their homes. That means no family get-togethers or dinners with friends. But that's also included domestic workers like housekeepers, nannies, and home health aides. In early April, a study by the National Domestic Workers Alliance found that more than 70% of the workers they surveyed had lost all of their usual jobs and wages for the coming week. And in recent months, even as some industries have gradually reopened, many domestic workers are still in an economic bind as families try to balance the risk of opening their homes with the overwhelming need for help. And for the domestic workers who are still employed, concerns about contracting COVID-19 remain. 25% of the workers surveyed in June by the Institute for Policy Studies either experienced or lived with someone who has experienced coronavirus symptoms. All this is hitting women of color especially hard, as they make up the vast majority of domestic workers in the United States. Assessing the risks faced by domestic workers during this pandemic and the way ahead is where we start today. Joining me now is Kimberly Freeman Brown, co-author of the report Notes from the Storm, Black Immigrant Domestic Workers in the Time of COVID-19 from the Institute for Policy Studies. Kimberly, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me, Tanzina.
Also with us is Caitlin Dickerson, immigration reporter for The New York Times. Caitlin, welcome back.
Hi, Tanzina. Thanks. Good to be with you.
So, Caitlin, you spoke with a number of undocumented domestic workers who had lost work at the end of March. What were some of their employers telling them at the time?
It was really coming quite simply, you know, in the form of a text message, maybe a phone call saying, you know, please don't come into work tomorrow. That was a message that nannies received, that house cleaners received, that gardeners received, which sounds like a casual message, but it's a really big deal to somebody who really has almost no discretionary money, who has no extra money beyond what they need to make their bills. And it's only really continued, you know, as you pointed out, when the country closed down, social distancing was the first rule of thumb. As a result, people asked their nannies to stay home, asked their house cleaners to stay home. And these workers rely on handshake deals for their employment in many cases. They're often paid in cash, which means they didn't have any contractual or legal entitlement to anything like sick pay or vacation days. And, you know, the situation is only compounded by the fact that workers, especially those who don't have legal status, who work in the domestic sphere, were not eligible for federal stimulus money. And two, as the economy now contracts, domestic workers are really the first discretionary expense to go. And so not only did domestic workers lose their work first, but their hopes of getting it back, really for many, feel quite low.
Kimberly, you co-authored the survey we mentioned at the top of Black immigrant domestic workers in New York City, Miami, and Massachusetts. Tell me about what some of the findings were in those three different areas with this group.
We surveyed 811 Black immigrant domestic workers in the three locations that you mentioned. 70% of those who responded to our survey in those three locations reported that they had either lost their jobs or received reduced hours and pay. And in Miami, for example, it was the worst. 93% of respondents reported having lost wages or having lost their jobs. Housing insecurity was another big issue that we saw. 65% of respondents said that they are fearful or at risk of eviction or utility shut off in the next 3 months, facing, you know, their worst fears of, you know, being without a home or without utilities.
This is an industry that really is dominated by women of color, Black women, Latina women, Asian women, and many of these women are also undocumented. Did your survey responses differ from undocumented versus documented workers in terms of their fears?
We saw, Tanzina, that in almost every area where we surveyed Black immigrant domestic workers, that undocumented workers reported even worse conditions. So, for example, with job loss, undocumented workers were nearly twice as likely as documented workers to be terminated.
Caitlin, did you find similar experiences in your reporting? Because you've spoken with a woman named Enriqueta, who's undocumented, who had been working as a house cleaner until the pandemic started. Tell us a little bit about her experience.
Enriqueta, she lives in Austin, Texas. She and her husband were both house cleaners and lost their jobs immediately in mid-March when the virus broke out, with no, you know, sick pay or contingency pay or anything like that. It was just one day they were employed, the next day they weren't. They had 6 and 8 year old sons, and the rest of their life really falls apart from there. So she gets sick and starts experiencing symptoms of the coronavirus immediately after. Her landlord starts knocking on the door demanding rent money, and there was a moratorium on evictions placed in Austin. But as I've reported, in many places where these moratoriums exist, you know, they don't necessarily apply to undocumented workers who have landlords who want to collect their money and aren't really worried about their well-being, because the undocumented folks, they tend to be too scared to go to the authorities to fight back and say, hey, my landlord is trying to illegally evict me. That was the case for Enriqueta. So when she was facing this immense pressure to pay rent, she was too scared to report it because she didn't want to be separated from her children and deported. And so what she ended up doing was just fleeing with her kids. And she's been bouncing around from home to home ever since. She was sleeping in a living room of one of the cousins of her husband for a while on a blow-up mattress. And basically her husband, you know, seemed to experienced such extreme stress from the situation that he started drinking, she told me, excessively, and he eventually left her on her own to take care of the kids. She's had no income since then. Her kids dropped out of school for the last couple of months because the house they were staying in had no internet access. They were hardly getting any sleep because they were sleeping on an air mattress in a living room. People were coming in and out of the house. You know, every time somebody got up to get a drink of water, it would wake them up. And eventually, the city of Austin did find out about her living situation. It was reported to the mayor's office by her son's school, and the city helped them move into a new apartment. They were subletting at the time my story published a bedroom in a new apartment, but again, with no lease and no protection and no income. Already, that situation has become stressful. You know, the landlord was beginning to pressure her and demanding money that she didn't have, and so she's actually back now out with her two children, staying with yet another friend and looking for another place to stay. Her situation is very precarious. And I should say, this entire time of the pandemic, the family has been relying completely on food donated by her children's school in order to survive. So she's really got, you know, at various times when I've been on the phone with her, no money in her purse, maybe $5 or $10 in her purse. That's really it. And she's really thinking about, you know, not just how are we going to get through the next month, how are we going to pay rent, but how are we going to get through today? You know, how am I going to get my kids enough food just to eat today?
So, Kimberly, Caitlin just expertly laid out what happens when a domestic worker loses their job. But there's also a risk that many of these workers face entering homes in this moment of the coronavirus. Do you know whether or not employers are following the CDC guidelines when it comes to providing protective gear for their workers?
That was one of the questions that we asked in the survey, and what we found was very alarming. The women who responded to the survey reported that 73% reported that they have not received personal protective equipment from their employers, and that percentage was much higher for undocumented workers.
And what we're talking about here are things like having hand sanitizer available, right, and having masks available.
Right, protective clothing, anything that would really reduce exposure and, you know, prevent the spread of germs.
If a worker gets sick, Kimberly, what kind of health care can they access?
What we saw was that 51% of the respondents to our survey said that they don't have medical insurance at all. And the numbers were particularly alarming for undocumented workers. In Miami, 100% of the Black immigrant workers who responded to our survey said that they did not have medical insurance. The numbers were also much higher for undocumented workers than their documented counterparts in Massachusetts and New York City. In New York City, 83% of undocumented workers do not have access to medical insurance. In Massachusetts, it was 42%.
Caitlin, some of this is, we've touched on this briefly, but some of this is reminding me of the public charge rule that's been implemented by the Trump administration here in regards to undocumented workers. Could you explain for our listeners what that was and how it might factor into the services that these workers, particularly those who are undocumented, may not be able to access?
Absolutely. It's definitely related. So your listeners may remember the public charge rule the Trump administration introduced is one that's designed to penalize anybody here in the country without legal status for using any type of public benefits, really, whether it comes to housing or it comes to food stamps or it comes to anything related to their health care. Any use of public benefits and support can be used against an immigrant who is later trying to adjust their status and become legal and obtain legal permanent residency. And so this created a chilling effect, which we've talked about all over the country. And it really affects every sector of American life because it highly discourages the use of public benefits. And that's definitely coming into play right now. But even beyond that, some nonprofit groups called together money to try to issue grants to fill in the gaps where the federal money just didn't exist for certain populations of people. But there's a real fear of taking advantage of any of that support because the thinking is that it could later be used against someone.
What is it that employers can do now? And by employers, I mean anyone who is hiring a home health aide, nanny help, any one of these domestic workers. What should people who are doing that be thinking about in order to protect these workers?
I think the first thing is to see them as human beings and as workers. They're not members of your family with whom you can have more informal arrangements. That, you know, you have to see yourself as an employer and those that you employ as people that work for you, and that you should be providing the same sort of standards of care that you would expect for yourself. Be that, you know, PPE in times like this, a contract that dictates how much and when people are paid. Wage theft is a big problem. The scope of work that they're asked to perform and that they agree to perform doesn't shift and change. And that should there be a need to reduce their hours or to terminate their employment, there should be fairness in that proposition, including advance notice. Most domestic workers who find themselves in that situation, as Caitlin mentioned, it's a phone call or a text that you get, and that there's no opportunity for you to be left out.
Kimberly Freeman Brown is co-author of the report Notes from the Storm, Black Immigrant Domestic Workers in the Time of COVID-19 from the Institute for Policy Studies. And Caitlin Dickerson is an immigration reporter for The New York Times. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.